Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 58 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So some brief announcements this week going into our discussion of episode 108. What is it? Both Sides Now? Which makes me think of Joni Mitchell, FYI. This week, we did get notified of the premiere date for the second half of season one on Stars Network, and I'm sad to say the return date is April 4th, 2015.
And there's lots of disappointment, vehement, and strong, passionate fan reaction, which we understand.
No.
But as Pod tweeted, we will get through this together.
No, absolutely.
And there's more than one fan, quote unquote, outlet, whatever you want to call it. We're in this planning stages, and we hope to have some. Well, you already know that we have a Dragonfly Never read along.
Yes.
But other sites, I have heard wind that there may be some other things planned too. So it's not just us. There are other podcasts doing things. There are other sites doing things and groups. So we are going to do our best. I think fans in general, you will have plenty to do during this.
I don't disagree with that. The only thing I will say is that Stars has done such a good job of hooking everyone into the series that to make them wait for basically what amounts to 7 months.
It's 6 months. October, November, December, January, February, March. It's
4 days in April. Somebody put 7 months. Yeah. 6 months. To make us wait 6 months after hooking everyone so well. I mean, this is like drug dealer 101. You give them a taste, and then you, like, you know, bleed them for it. So they're doing their drug dealer job. Drug being Outlander, the series.
Of course.
So I think my only fear is that for the people who are casual viewers, my only fear is that perhaps they won't come back after 6 months. I hope they will. I know that I'll be here. I have literally nothing better in my life to wait around for. That sounds bad. I have plenty of things going on in my life. My point being, I will be anxiously awaiting April 4th. I just am sad that it's April 4th.
I think everyone would love to have it be, well, like next weekend. Everyone would love to have it be next week or, you know, sooner. I think everyone would agree that we would love it to be sooner. But we also know that a tremendous amount of prep goes into the episodes, into cutting them and finalizing them. And that what we have seen up till now has been superb. Yes, we're biased, but it also has gotten great critical acclaim. It is superb, and we know that's what they do, and they want to continue doing it. So I have no problem waiting, because I know that's what we're going to get.
No, I agree. And as a podcast, I feel that it's been helpful to us to kind of be given a little bit of direction on how much time we have to
it
fill.
It does help planning.
Between this and the next. I just, to be honest, I would find it way more helpful if I knew how much time we would have between the end of the series and the beginning of the next for planning purposes.
And that's
for us.
That will come.
Okay. They also released a new picture of Jamie and Claire, which is also from episode 108, of them kind of standing and looking at each other. And this is right around when he says Lady Lollybrock with the hashtag Outlander returns April 4th, which, again, I feel the same way about it now as I did 20 seconds ago. We also got a new shot of Dougal and Claire in her wedding finery. And Dougal, it looks like he's, I don't know, trying to frighten her, jump at her, scare
something,
her.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure, but he looks like he's going, ah, with his arms up, and she's just laughing. Because I get the impression that's kind of the relationship they all have with each other. Lots of laughter. We got a new Hey Lassie this week of Jamie in his wedding finery, which, he looked so mighty fine in his wedding finery, and Claire in her wedding dress, and he's definitely got his, like, eyebrow cocked at her, and she's kind of, you know, glaring at him, actually, but he's, you know, with his eyebrow cocked.
She almost looked like she's in a portrait here. I mean, just in, like, she looks in, a little, like, the three-quarter profile. Well, yeah, but she looks very profile-y. I mean,
well, she looks very
portrait-y.
Her bosom still has center stage in this shot, but it says, hey, Lassie, you look very fine in that dress, which is true. She does look very fine in that dress.
And she-
we also got notified. Well, we did not get notified, but they released they released kind of information that's like, if you want to be notified when the Outlander DVD is available through Amazon.co.uk, I guess you can go on and sign up on that waiting list and they'll email you when you find out. So, UK, I don't know when you're going to get it on your TVs, but if you want to find out when you're going to be able to buy it, you can go to Amazon and sign up to be part of that
waiting list.
And I
did look on the US site, and the correlating thing on the US site is not yet available. So that's interesting. Not complaining, though. No. We've got it, girl.
No, and to be honest, it's going to live very long on my DVR. In fact, they may have to pry this DVR out of my cold, dead hands. Because I don't plan on deleting it, and I would like to probably always keep it. And until the DVD comes out, it will not be deleted from my DVR. Period. And that is going to be our announcements for the week, because there is so much read-along to come. Not read-along. Discussion coming along here.
So, episode 108, Both Sides Now. Written by Ron Moore and directed again by Anna Frosta.
Yes.
Beautifully done. Obviously, coming off of the wedding episode, it's completely different. So expectations just can't be the same. It's totally different.
Agreed.
But it was awesome.
I think that this episode had the most added material and lots and lots and lots of Frank, which I think was a good thing. I enjoy Frank more in the series than I did in the books.
Oh, that we've heard that so much. I mean, I don't disagree, but yes, we've heard that so much. It's a consistent theme. When it started, I think it was on the second viewing, because the first time I liked just to watch and enjoy and not worry about, I pay attention, but I try not to worry about notes I'm taking or anything. I went back on the second one, and I think I even rewound it again to get the chunk. There were literally like 15 seconds of music coming off the opening title, and usually hasn't there been discussion of or people mention, and Bear said, you know, good eye or good ear, that the music coming off of the title helps sets the theme for the content of the episode.
I would definitely agree that it helps set the scene for the episode. Mm-hmm. For instance, with the garrison commander, it was the military drums.
Yeah.
Last week, it was sort of a wedding march. And this week, I thought it was very much in the tone of the original, kind of in the same... the same sound of the actual intro, as opposed to kind of evoking anything else.
I haven't timed the others, but to me it seems there's usually a little more. This one seemed really short to me. And again, this could be totally off base, but I haven't timed any of the others. But I did time this using my stopwatch app on my phone, and it was literally, okay, my reflexes obviously. I got 15.2 seconds, and that starts when I first hear it to then when it gets so soft I couldn't hear it anymore. Since many times the music coming off the opening helps sets the tone, it made me think this will be, because of how slow it was, that it echoed the intro music, and also because of how short it was, like it wasn't some swell building swell to take you into raptures or anything. To me, I immediately thought this is going to be a very sobering episode. And it was.
Well, what I thought going in is I got the impression right off the bat with the imagery they used that they were going to be going back and forth between time periods, because they had the old maps resting over the new map, or the modern map, 1945's modern map. And they were just kind of laying on top of each other, but seamlessly. Like, here's a map from the 1740s, and then it's completely lined up and perfectly aligned with a map from the 1940s. So I thought it was a really nice image. Which set the tone for what was about to happen. And then the phone rings. So we know
right off the bat
we're in the 40s.
And of course.
1940s.
And the phone rings and we're in a police station. And it seems, we find out, Frank has been to the station one too many times.
Oh, you get the impression he's been there every day for 6 weeks.
Or something.
Yeah, constantly.
So many times, in fact, that the officer needs to drink to deal with him. Now, he could have drunk like ever since his third time. We don't know. We have no evidence of anything else. But it seemed like, because what he said was, okay, it's time, or this is the day, basically, setting it up for, like, this is going to be different. I got to do something about this. And he pulled out the whiskey or pulled out the drink. So
he didn't. The other guy did. He's like, here you go.
Yeah, but I'm saying he took the drink.
He did.
So I don't know if that was a custom Like, for him to, like, oh, just to deal with the guy because he came every day? Or it's like, look, this is going to be kind of a, I got to do this. And in order to take care of this, whether it's him or his buddy, he's going to get a little whiskey or something.
I found it moderately insulting.
Oh,
on Frank's behalf.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we know where Claire is. That's neither here nor there. But, and it's not even really that. But it's just, can you imagine showing up desperate to find your wife?
And this is his only job right now.
Exactly.
There's nothing else for him to do.
And the cop rolls in.
Yeah.
With a teacup full of what's obviously whiskey, because whiskey smells completely different than tea.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that you could tell me that a little, like, a teacup full of whiskey is unrecognizable and could be mistaken for tea.
Just as the officer seems frustrated, Frank is just as frustrated, if not more, because there's no updates. And there's no updates on the whereabouts of his wife. It's been, I think they say 7 weeks. And they pan to the wall, and all they have is her photo and a police sketch of the Highlander.
I don't know why
that made me laugh.
Do you know what I thought when I saw that picture? I thought Frank probably drew it.
Probably so.
Which would echo back to
Which is interesting because it looks very, I won't say feminine, but it was smoother lines than the very mannish picture
woman.
Of Kate. Exactly.
I found it humorous that Frank just, like, dressed that cop down, like, immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, he walked up and he's like,
boom.
I know you must be disappointed. And he was like, all I've expected you to do is your job.
And
I expected very little from you, and you've consistently met that very little.
And to the officer's defense, and you have to, you know, looking at it from his point of view, he gives good evidence of why, he didn't say they're stopping, but he gives good evidence of why it's may not go on too much longer. And that is, there's no body that's been found, there's no blood and no struggle that they saw. Or, sorry, no blood means no struggle. And if there's no body, the evidence points towards her being still alive. Okay, great, which is actually true.
I know, but their theory.
But they're saying that she wasn't taken against her will, and
right.
That is.
That's false.
Well, yeah, I'm not talking true or false. I'm just saying that is what's hard for him.
No, agreed.
And even contemplate.
Though, to be honest, when you think about it, that is the simplest explanation. That's the explanation that makes the most sense with the evidence they have at hand.
Slightly later on in the episode, because as you know, and as listeners will know by now, if they've watched the episode, hopefully, they go back and forth a lot. Not just long scenes, like very short scenes back and forth quickly.
But with brilliant editing. I mean,
good editing.
It made
there
so much, like, they were so great.
Very,
like
very...
Just the transitions from time periods were so great.
And Frank admits that the Highlander is involved, but will not accept, of course, that he's involved with his wife intimately. And I just realized he's actually wrong, but in the wrong way. Obviously, the Highlander is involved with his wife,
yeah.
But it's not in the way that he thinks.
No.
Meaning, or not in the way that he doesn't want to think. He actually is, but obviously in a different time. So,
I thought it was funny when Frank is like, what do you have to show for these efforts? You know, he listed this litany of things they've been doing. He's like, and what do you have to show for these efforts? And I was like, he's day drinking on the job. And he's probably now a raging alcoholic. That's what he has to show for his efforts. And I thought that was a fairly detailed drawing for someone Frank barely saw. And
in the dark.
In the dark. And if you remember, he turned away from him. So he never even saw his face.
Yeah.
So that was an incredible likeness for him to have been able to pull up, basically.
Whether it was him or a sketch artist, yeah. So then we're brought to Scotland, where we see the newlywed couple.
But the transition was so lovely, because it's like, my wife was not with another man.
And then,
cue
boom.
To, my wife with another man.
So we have the newlywed couple, and he says, I do not, and I love it, because he says he doesn't mean to imply, but I'm sorry, he just does it.
Jamie says,
I do not mean to imply that you have some vast knowledge of men. Yes, Jamie, you do. Just admit it. Even if it is just in comparison to you, that's exactly what you're saying.
No, but
and
she,
it's true compared
it's not
to
even
him.
So much that
well,
it's
him
vast.
With, him with women,
but she's been married before, which means she has at least one more.
Which compared to
notch
a virgin
on her belt
is
loop
vast. That's
well,
all
that's
I'm
what
saying.
One more notch on her belt loop. But it was interesting just to watch Claire struggle. She had no interest like in telling the truth, and she did it anyway. You know what I mean? She was like. Because he's is this normal, what's between you and I? And she was like, something like this. But no, it's not normal. Like, she almost didn't want to admit it because she's trying so hard to not be present in their relationship at this point. Who cares?
This arrow flies by and bam, of course, he's like, get down! And we find out it's Hugh. So from the moment we saw the picture of Simon Meacock playing Q and Ro in the promotional photos that mm-hmm. Starz released last week. Oh, just, it just makes, I know everything is becoming that much more real, but just seeing him, it's like, we get Hugh, you know, because yes, Hugh's important for the whole Horrox thing. I mean, which brings on the next scene, which is where this episode cuts off. But every time we see something that's new, it just gives me shivers. It will never get old.
Now, the only thing I felt about this, I thought this whole scene was well played. Mm-hmm. But I did think that Human Row did not look like a pumpkin.
Yeah, I'm...
So, the description from the book was not accurate to what was cast, but I thought he did such a good job it didn't matter.
But Summer, so many descriptions are not kept.
I know, but that was such a specific
the pumpkin. Description, I did like that.
Like, you know, like a jack-o'-lantern, basically. So he did not look like a jack-o'-lantern, but to back up, I liked the way they played it.
To back up a second, I did find after the arrow lands and Jamie's like, get down, Sassanag, and he like lands on her or whatever, gets her down, and then he gets up to go see the arrow, and he's like, oh, it's Hugh. He just totally leaves her there, and you see Katrina trying to get up. She's like, oh. She got up. She's a strong girl, but she...
I'm sorry. Did you see her trying to run later in the episode?
Oh, yeah. I have something to say about that, too.
Good Lord.
So he introduces Claire as his wife, and Hugh says he has news, and which we will get to, or he gets to. And all I have to say, yes, this freaked me out. And I saw it. When we saw it in the promo photos, you knew I had to say this on the episode. Okay, a wedding gift. That is the biggest piece of Amber's I've seen in ages, if not ever.
Well, and that was neat. And for as large of a piece of Amber it was, that was such a tiny dragonfly. Like, I thought for a piece of Amber that large, they could have gone for a much larger dragonfly.
But when she held it and, you know, said what it was and said, oh, a dragonfly, I almost lost my shizzle. This is the first reference to what will be the second series. The second season, the second book. Yeah. It's beautiful. A dragonfly. Oh my gosh. Season 2, it's going to be the best. It's going to slay me.
I did think it was strange that Jamie bothered making hand motions to talk to him since his ears worked just fine. But maybe it was like their secret language so that they could have this, you know, secret conversations together.
And then, just like I was excited to see, besides the Amber, the Gaberlenzies.
Oh, so many Gaberlenzies.
Oh my gosh, it just, again, shivers and tickles and it's, I can't explain it. It gives me like goosebumps and makes my nose tingle and... Interesting. It truly, okay, it's not necessarily vital to the story, but something that was missing was word of Hugh's own wife. Yes, his marriage. Because even though nothing really is done about that here, that does come back, and I don't think it will really truly affect, it doesn't have to necessarily affect anything. They can leave that out and bring that back. Yeah. That doesn't hurt anything.
No, they can. And
but I was a little surprised.
And they could spin it to the point that, you know, it's not something new and he could have already been.
And they could have cut it. I mean, like, it could have been something that didn't make it in.
It didn't.
It probably was in there and they cut it.
But it has to come back later. Like it, like for that season. Scene in the next book, it has to come back later. It's important.
It is very important. And that's all we're going to say.
Yes.
So did Hugh in the book, did Diana refer to him making a gesture or a greeting with a hand that goes to his forehead, mouth, and heart? It looked like some kind of Eastern greeting. I don't think it was a Western greeting. I know he spent a lot of time among the Turks as a slave, but
you know, it was reminiscent of some sort of a. It looked like it was combining like the Catholic Father, Son, Holy Ghost with something else. But it did look Eastern. Very Moorish.
Now
it was very Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
That's
only
true.
Minus Kevin Costner, who ruined the whole thing.
So we find out, of course, this is truly as much as we like Human Row, right? And of course, Dragonfly and Amber, which need to be there, of course. The most important role that Hugh plays is bringing the information about Horrox.
And I loved that interplay where he was like,
yes.
He grabs a rock, Horrox, yeah. And he's like, no, 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 here's two rocks, Horrox.
That was sweet.
I thought it was funny. And then Hugh makes an exit.
We learn that Horrox may be able to name Jamie as innocent because supposedly he knows of or saw the person who killed the Sergeant Major. But we find out Horrox is a redcoat deserter. Keep that in mind. When Hugh leaves and he turns in joy and enthusiasm to Claire, telling her, you know, I may be able to clear my name. And he says, I want to take my bride, Claire Fraser, to Lallybroch, home. And it's like, oh, man, that's... there's such hope in him right there. It's just, it makes me so sad.
And this was our first mention of Lolly Brock.
And then Claire, as he hugs her and she's hugging him, Claire sees a peek of her gold ring. And then, of course, we go back to the 20th century and we see Frank. Okay. So, we're in the manse. We have Reverend Wakefield. And I wrote, tons of shiz all over his walls. Okay, it reminds me of the beginning of Dragonfly and Amber, the description of all the hoarding.
The hoarding,
the boxes, poor. Yes, that's all I'm going to say. But the Reverend is trying to devise how Claire may have survived and not have been found. And he suggests eating fish and frogs and using her army survival training.
And living in a cave.
The best line of the night, one of the two best, is Frank says, fish and frogs. And the look on Devise's face is hilarious. Like, what the F?
Yeah.
No, and then...
Wee Roger.
So cute. Oh my gosh. May I have a biscuit, please?
The one thing I noticed about this...
And biscuits first.
Yeah, of course biscuits. Biscuits are delicious and lovely.
Oh, no, I mean, he says, and biscuits.
Yes.
Oh, and I got some tears at Wee Roger.
The one thing that... I don't know, I kind of appreciated about the filter they used on the 1940s was that you couldn't tell what color Wee Roger's eyes were. It was
kind of dark, too.
Exactly, which will play into it later, because then if they cast someone who's not...
Same color eyes.
Right, it won't matter as much. And we all know...
They definitely did not look brown, though.
No, they definitely were lighter eyes.
Yeah.
But... They could go, I mean, then, with the series, they could go
who
with
knows, blue, go in with the green. Flash, in the flashback, if there's a flashback, because we're not going to talk about anything right now, if and when Roger comes back, which he may not, who knows, it can't go back and refilm it, but they could do something with it and show the same color.
They could enhance them, yeah.
Yes.
They could totally enhance them to make them look whatever. One of my biggest pet peeves about casting, and I know that there's only so much you can do, but with CGI the way it is, it should not ever be an issue ever again. When they cast a blue-eyed person and then in a flashback have their younger self have brown eyes. Like, it's such a simple fix.
Especially if it's just a shot of someone.
Right.
If it's,
and they if don't it's even a long have to scene, talk.
If it's a long scene, that's much more work. But if it's even minutes long, well, I can't say minutes long. If it's just a shot of someone, then, or a few seconds.
Yeah.
Then, I don't do CGI. But I understand that, obviously, the more film you have, the longer it takes.
And sometimes these people don't even have, like, lines. They just hire someone to be in the scene. Yeah, and I'm like, if you're just looking for someone who kind of looks like them and has close to the same eye color, and I don't even need them to be exact. I'm just saying, if it's a blue-eyed main character later on, do not start with a brown-eyed child. I just think that that's, you
know. Or don't flash back to a brown-eyed
child. Right, that's weird.
So then after the manse, we're still in the 40s, we go to a bar. And a strange blonde comes to sit next to Frank, and she says her name is Sally, although she says it's not my real name. And Frank gives her the same once over, that Randall gave Claire on their first meeting. What's funny is that this person was, to me, way too obvious about this whole quote-unquote spy thing.
This scene pissed me off. It pissed me off because it was
And Randall should have known better.
Right. He was drinking. That's the only thing he can have is to have in his divan. He was drinking and
hurting.
He
drank of the cup of evil.
I'll get to that.
That's later.
He was drunk and he was sad and hopeful that he could find his wife because he doesn't believe she's dead, which she's not. But the only thing in his defense are those two things. However, anyone in their right mind, if he's told by someone who comes up and says, call me Sally, but that's not my name. Meet me in a dark alley in an hour and a half, or however long away from now. Meet me in the dark. Come alone.
And bring money.
I'm like, really?
I get wanting to meet him to hit him up for the reward he's trying to give away. But first saying, it's not my real name. And then when she's like, okay, we're going to meet, she says, and he was kind of getting up to go. She's like, not now. She made such, even though she didn't yell, she made such a scene in there.
Yeah.
It's like, seriously? And I also thought, I'm wondering if she or her beau had any connection to someone at the police station or someone. It's probably widely known in that community because probably this doesn't happen that often. It's probably widely known that this person is missing or that Frank is there looking for his wife. It has to be like the news of the town. So I'm sure that's not hard for her to have heard and then arrange this kind of thing. But it does make me wonder if they know anything about Frank's spy background.
Obviously they didn't, because if they did, they would have known he'd show up with whatever the heck that was, and beat the hell out of them.
Okay, now we go back to the 18th century, and I wrote, in all caps, Raiders on the Rocks!
Well, what I wrote was, so we get the water horse story. No water horse,
oh,
but
yeah.
We get the story.
But does Rupert tell it in the book? And does it even come in this chapter? They're doing something while they're getting ready.
I think it does come in this chapter, okay. Because it's like that big campfire scene where they're all sitting down and telling stories. And it...
Is it
I
Rupert? Don't,
I didn't... I did not look it up, but it would not surprise me if it was Rupert.
Yeah.
You can tell that he's so not interested in telling the story. There's something else going on, because even he's not fully committed to it.
Yes, and technically, it's the story of the water horse's wife, and...
But they don't even discuss the fact that the water horse's wife was stolen. Like,
no,
she was kidnapped.
Well, we came in after the beginning.
Right, they just talk about just them kidnapping the mason expert to build a chimney or whatever the heck that guy was.
So, Claire and Jamie are playing handsy. They talk about the seasons, and...
And I talked about, in my notes... about how I love the quiet moments between Jamie and Claire.
Always. Always.
It's, and they don't even always say things. Like, sometimes it's just a looks. Shot of them sitting with each other and, like you said, you know, holding each other's hands or just, you know, caressing each other. I mean, it's just so much is said between the two of them without saying a word, which I think, you know, is a credit to the acting skills of the actors and their connection as actors.
Yes. And then as they get wind or knowledge of something freaky's going on, something's gonna happen. In the book, he asks her to, or he's whispering to her, but he asks her to, basically, he's like, see that there's a cave over there, right? It's a cave.
It was a cleft in the rock.
Yeah, but it was a rock. It wasn't a tree.
No, it wasn't okay. It
wasn't a fallen tree. And then when it's time, Jamie yells, go! When Rupert gets to the line, his blood runs cold as water, and there's no need of fire. Maybe not interesting at all, but it was interesting. And I wrote, fight, fight, fight!
Well, what I saw is like, she looks to go, and he goes, no, don't look around. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. And you can see everyone kind of like, Murta's just kind of walking around. This
doo-doo-doo.
You see Dougal reaching for his sword. Mm. You see everyone kind of readying themselves, but trying to be, you know, unobtrusive about it. Which
nonchalant, yeah.
Nonchalant. And then all of a sudden, and I don't know why Jamie got to choose when to call it.
That's true.
Who,
I wonder
who made
if he
him
did
in
the,
charge of that?
Did he do it in the books too?
I don't know. I think what he
in the
said
books?
Was, when I tell you, go. And I believe that's true, but I don't believe he's the one who called it.
If it was in the books and he got to do it, then that would be Diana.
Right.
But here, yeah, I don't know. There's a skirmish. We find out afterwards that it was the Grants. The funny thing is...
It's so funny. I wrote skirmish, too.
Skirmish. The funny thing is, in the book, they make... And I know they have much... She has all the time and space in the world in the book, and in here, we're very limited to time.
Right.
But in the book, I thought it was kind of important, but they also, I believe, say it was the Grants. But there is... It was, even though it was
Well, they made
fight,
it clear they were on
they
Grant
it,
lands.
Yes, but they, even though they said it was a fight, quote unquote, it was almost...
It was playful.
It was very playful, it was definitely...
It's a game.
She's kind of freaked out, like, oh my gosh, you know, is everybody okay? And they were like, well, yeah, people are injured, this happened, but it was much more like, and she said, there's some line, she's like, some line that shows her fear or shows her shock, whatever. And then there's a retort or there's a reply that's like, oh, that wasn't a war. That was not serious. That was just sport.
Well, and I think they got that across. I think they got that across in the fact where she was kind of like, you know, she's like, I'm okay. And everyone's kind of like taking stock. And then all of a sudden, Ned's like, did you see that shot? It was like 20 paces if it wasn't however long. Anyway. And so when he says that, it, like, breaks the tension in that moment.
Yeah.
Like, all the tension everyone had from, like being coiled and just, like, holding all your muscles tight because you're fighting. And all of a sudden he says that and everyone goes,
yeah,
Ned.
And the scene ends with Jamie hugging Claire and calling her, yet again, a Grey.
It does. And honestly, that scene needed to end with a little bit
lighter.
Of doing it around a campfire with everyone else pretending they're not doing it. I couldn't believe they left that out.
You know what? Oh, you know what? When I watched it the first time, I thought, oh, they didn't do it. And I thought, surely I'll remember to take notes. And I didn't until you just said that. Because that's where we hear, and they're like, however far away from them, right? That's where we hear him saying that fighting gives him a raging cock stand.
Yes.
Something like that.
I'm
like, that would have been such a perfect, I mean, again.
No, it's true. I did not mourn the loss of him telling her she was as slippery as a water weed.
Was it right there?
Yes.
Oh.
It's one of my least favorite descriptions.
I'm disappointed, Mr. Moore.
No, it's one of my least favorite descriptions, so I didn't mourn that, but I did mourn the whole scene because I think that scene in the book was very indicative of Claire and how affected she is by Jamie and how, in the end, you know, she does try to be, like, modest about it and be like, there's people, like, right there. And he's like, no one's paying attention. He's like, they're all going to ignore me. He's like, let's just get this done. I can't go to sleep unless I do this right now.
Back to the 20th century, and Frank goes to meet this strange dame who is not named Sally.
No.
And, of course, it's a setup. Hello. So,
dude, it was a set, like I said, a mile away.
It was a setup
away.
From a mile and a half
Everybody
away.
Everybody knew that was a setup.
So I know she's not on a first name basis with him, but when she greets him as Mr. Randall,
yeah,
I immediately think of Randall as in BJR. Immediately. And I thought, I don't know if it was on purpose or if it's I'm reading too much into it something again, but I'm wondering if Ron did that on purpose because, yes, it is his last name, so it could just be that that's how she's addressing him.
But it
also gives you a little bit of a foreshadowing or a forewarning of the Randall coming out in Frank.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. But it would have been really informal for her to call him Frank. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think that it would have been really jarring for her to be like, Frank, I thought you'd be early. But I don't blame her for thinking that. He's been desperately searching for his wife for weeks. Why wouldn't he be there? He has a hint of that somebody might have an inclination or know where his wife may be, and why wouldn't he show up?
Not as well. So it ends up being 2-on-1, of course. And I wrote, what is that thing that Frank has? Is it like an iron bullet thing?
No,
a big
you
old
know
iron?
What?
I've seen it, I think, but
I have seen it, but it's like
scary.
It's like a little it reminded me of like a little tiny nightstick. Like the like the cops use, but I know that they're usually like rubber but they're very dangerous, and I can't remember what
they're
called.
Iron, right?
I've seen in the 40s. I've seen like cops in other like 40s movies use them.
He's in a rage and he's not able to stop almost, and then he ends up choking that girl, not named Sally, and he's able to stop himself. But he definitely has the Randall blood.
Does, but it was totally justified.
Oh, I'm not saying it wasn't just
so justified.
I did not say it wasn't justified, but he was in a little bit of a rage.
Oh, for sure. I think that there is more, you know.
And then I wrote, there is no Highlander, Frank. There is no Highlander. Or at least not that you'll be able to find.
There's no way he's going to find. He's not in the present time. He's never going to find him.
And then they're back at the manse.
They do. And can I tell you what made me laugh so hard about this? Made me laugh because the Reverend is like, oh, you drink of the cup of evil. The Nazis drank of the cup of evil. And I thought, wow, you beat up one would-be mugger and people will start comparing you to the Nazi. I was like, that seems excessive.
I loved his line, evil has but one cup. What he's trying to say is not compare him to a Nazi, but Frank's like, what? Basically, even though he didn't say this, he's like, what? Are you comparing me to Nazis now?
That's what I'm saying.
And the Rev was like, evil has but one cup. It doesn't, they drank deeper and longer from it. It's a matter of how long and how deep you've drunk from it. And he suggests that he starts his life over. He says, let go of Claire as she has let go of you. And that kills me.
Well, but what killed me about it was, like I said, he was defending himself against muggers. And the Reverend's like,
yeah, he didn't go looking for something.
Dude, you need to cool it because you're one step away from being a Nazi. Come on, think about that. That's what I'm saying. I was like, that's kind of a giant leap.
But when he's talking about the whole thing of letting Claire go, start your life over, doesn't he refer to Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
He quotes
when
it.
You eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think what predates Sherlock Holmes or Arthur Conan Doyle is Occam's Razor. And that is...
Did you just say Arthur? Arthur Conan Doyle.
Oh, that. Conan Doyle.
I swear to God, listen back. You'll hear Arthur. Arthur Conan Doyle.
And it seems there are a number of versions of this. The two that were closest were one is Isaac Newton's version of it. We are to admit no more causes of natural things than such as are both true and sufficient to explain their appearances. Therefore, to the same natural effects we must, so far as possible, assign the same causes. Bertrand Russell also has a shorter, succinct version of this. Whenever possible, substitute constructions out of known entities for inferences to unknown entities. And I will share a link to the Wikipedia entry for Occam's Razor. There's all kinds of citations there that are
just
legit.
Just for the nerds among us.
Gotta do that. And so basically, the Reverend is saying, grow a pair, Frank. Face facts.
Well, everyone's telling him, dude, your wife ran off.
I know.
There's no proof she's dead. She ran off. And if you weren't, and he had said earlier in the last scene they were in where he was like, well, she could have fallen in the river, gone downstream.
No, like, because she's eating frogs and fish.
Downstream. Like, that's the whole thing. He's like, she could have fallen in the river, and then the river could have carried her downstream way further past than anyone's looking, and then she could be surviving on frogs and fish. But even that, Frank was like, no. No, that's not possible. But she's also not run away from me and is with someone else.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And we get a little hint that Mrs. Graham wants to say something. She gives, the camera shows her at least once, if not twice, and she's giving them or him a look.
Did you notice how long her hair was?
Mrs. Graham's?
Yeah, like everyone's hair got so much longer. And I only noticed it.
Katrina's got longer too.
Everyone. But hers got longer specifically in the scene at Fort William. Like it didn't look longer until Fort William, which I thought was
strange. Longer on the hill. But
no.
It was.
Mrs. Graham's was significantly longer. And I don't know if it was because the curl was not as tight. Like maybe she wasn't caring for her hair the way she was. Maybe they're all kind of affected by Claire's disappearance. But her hair, I only really noticed it because of the flashback they showed, where it was all tight and coiled and very close to her chin line. And then when they showed her in the 7 weeks present time, it was much closer to her shoulder.
So they filmed block, whichever block it was, the block, the two, episodes 7 and 8. The wedding in May. I'm guessing the wedding and episode 8 in May. So that was significantly longer, you know, months after the episodes 4 and 5 would have been done. Because they were out of order. So we knew that this was going to, that you'd probably see
it. But it makes sense. But we don't know that they're even using her hair. I mean, it could be a wig, which would mean that it's a stylistic choice by the costumers to make her hair that long.
So then we go back to the 18th century, and this is the scene. I'm glad they kept it. This is a scene. I mean, you kind of need it because if she doesn't have, she needs something for the next scene.
Yes.
But so this is from our episode, I think. No, this is not from our episode. But we talked about this in our read-along chapter, and we named the episode Knife Skills.
Well, I wrote, cue the ski and do.
Oh, yeah. And Angus starts, which is cool, and he teaches her first.
I meant to say this earlier. I'm sorry to interrupt. I know we hate that. However, I finally got a scene where I could see that Angus was missing his teeth.
Oh, good. Good
and
Lord.
It was the night
took her
before.
Eight.
I know. It took me episodes. 8 episodes.
That's
and
awful,
it was,
Summer.
But it was in the campfire light because it was the dark. For some reason, in the dark, you could see the way the light was hitting it. You could see that they were missing teeth. So, yes, I finally admit that he is missing teeth.
So, back to the knife skills. Angus is teaching her how to use it, the ski and do, basically. And he teaches her overhand and then from behind using poor Willie.
Poor Willie. You know, and I thought he was a poor choice for showing off anatomy because Angus was so much skinnier. So that Angus, I mean, granted, Angus can't show on himself because he can't see his back, but he was a much better choice for that kind of a, for
demonstration.
That, because you could see his ribs and you could see, you know, the definition of his body.
They kept Myrta's line that the only suitable weapon for a woman is poison.
No, they did. And then they had Dougal answer him back. That's really, not really adequate for hand-to-hand combat, basically, is what. The gist of it was, which is basically everything we've said, when we did our read-along earlier.
Like, stop here, thief, or stop here, antagonist. Please, drink this poison.
Let me pour this poison in your face.
No, stop, drink this, please. Let's have a cup of tea.
Exactly.
And Angus was basically saying, beware the sternum, Claire. And during this scene, so I love the drone of the bagpipes during the scene. It's, again, you will hear them, but it's very easy not to hear them because they're not loud and blasting. And it's a drone. It's just that it's like in the background and it's beautiful. It's just, it gives you that kind of war or fighting or.
It's like ambient, you know?
Yeah. Back to the 20th century in Mance. Frank is going through his stuff and Claire's suitcase. And that is sad that he sees we see her stuff. And then back to the 18th century. Is this the chapter something like Deserted Glades or something like that?
It's the glade with deserters in it, so it would not make...
Something like that.
It would not be completely out of character to have that be the name of it.
So this is where they get it on. Let's get it on.
That's not what happens.
They actually do get it on.
I know, but it was so not like... It was not very white reminiscent.
Oh, it doesn't matter. They were still getting it on. Okay.
Or actually get it on was Al Green, I think.
Okay.
Neither here nor there.
So... another line. This, okay, there may have been some changes. Dude. This episode was so full of lines and a stinking dragonfly in Amber. This episode was probably one of the best episodes besides the wedding that had, like, lines that just
straight from the
thrill
book.
Thrill me.
Okay. But I will say...
Wait.
I will not wait. I will not be waited.
Thrill me.
Okay, stop. My point is that the dialogue that he was having post-insertion...
Wow.
Was
a slap across my cheek. What?
Was so moderately awkward.
Like, he's like, can you imagine?
I feel like I'm gone when
I'm inside you. Like, I was like, oh, that's not awkward at all.
No,
like, Katrina was probably full on real laughing,
like,
there.
I know. And the multitasking necessary to make that scene work. Like, seriously, so many things going on. Okay, I have to pretend like I'm thrusting, but also have this conversation and also pretend like, you know, I'm affected by the fact that I'm thrusting. I mean, it was like,
whoa. Okay, hold on. As Summer's talking about this post-insertion conversation, she is a little bit Twitter-baited because she's dropping everything can't concentrate. Okay, go ahead.
That's kind of how I felt when I watched it. But
you dropped it like it's hot? No.
Always. It's just how I roll.
Okay, go please.
My point is that a whole, like, scene of dialogue was so moderately awkward and yet hilarious. So Katrina's reaction was priceless.
And don't forget the line. We referred to it, but I didn't say it. So the line here is, does it ever stop the wanting you? And I wrote, no, Jamie, never. And then, okay,
21 years and no.
Okay, tongue in cheek.
That's not where his tongue was.
Hold on. Tongue in cheek. And I wrote, and cock of a pistol.
Mm-mm.
Yes, there's a cock of a pistol.
No, there is, but you're in trouble for saying
that. No, it's a cock of a pistol. Nope. Summer. It's a real thing.
No, so what I wrote was cue the British deserters.
The whole thing happens so dang fast. It's like, wow. In the book, Claire's... Now, okay, I think it is extremely similar to the book, but I think in the book, it is made clear that... Because you obviously can read her thoughts. You're seeing it from her point of view. That
literally, you're reading them because they're written.
She is basically, okay, freaked out.
Not even that. What I missed was the shot from underneath him of the quizzical look on his face. Because you didn't hear the pistol cock in the book. But what you saw was his face change. Where she's like, oh, that's funny. He's making a weird face. And it was because somebody's got a gun to the back of his head.
So what I found interesting was that, okay, correct me if I'm wrong. In the book, they're doing it, the gun to his head, he stops, and whatever. And then, okay, he's pulled up, and one of the deserters gets on top of Claire.
Yeah.
But there is wording that not alludes to, that actually describes that the guy is working to get his britches down.
Yeah.
And working to, of course, start to rape her physically, right. Literally go inside. And she
You've come so far. I'm so proud of you. Inside? You would never have said that like a year ago.
Anyway, so she...
She said, go inside, you guys.
Stop it, Summer. So she makes the decision. Okay, and also in the book, because we're reading her thoughts, there's a lot of eye contact between them. Mm-hmm. And this, we didn't get as much, but it's okay. She makes the decision at some point to stop, because she struggles, stops struggling, allows him to at least think he's going to get a little bit further as he's trying to struggle on top of her, and allows him to come closer to her so she has better reach and aim.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I make a point to say all of this is that while I certainly hope it didn't happen, we don't have proof until or unless it's asked later on that he never actually got inside her.
Just stop. Nobody wants to hear that.
No one does. I'm just saying, in the book... It's for sure he did not. But who knows?
Can't we all just assume it didn't happen?
I hope not, but that's what I'm saying. Assume.
Unless it's mentioned later, we are just going to assume that he was not successful.
I hope not, too.
Okay. But I did love how the camera went slow-mo, because that's kind of an indicator in the book. And if you've ever been involved in any kind of a traumatic experience, that's really what happens. Like, time literally slows down to the point that you're just like...
Yes, I can say from personal experience that when you were in potentially dangerous situations, that especially in hindsight, during it kind of too, but especially in hindsight, it's like I see freeze frames. I see slow-mo from frame to frame to frame and I think that's why it's kind of weird. You know, you watch something slowly, you can see more detail. That's why I can say so much detail of what happened, because your brain is taking so much in.
What was so crazy about it was the way that they filmed it, because it was like it was in slow-mo, but not all at the same time. Like, it was slow, but it wasn't.
It was almost a slow run.
It was almost more like it was just missing frames. Like,
I agreed.
But I thought it was really accurate to kind of how it feels to be in those moments, because time really does. Now, granted, I've never had some dude on top of me trying to rape me while I have a knife in my boot that I pull out and stab him in the kidney with. That is not an experience of mine. But I could imagine that that's very close to reality for someone in that situation.
And also important to notice, and I think he remarks upon this, Claire saves herself, and that's important.
It does.
It will come back later on.
But it felt like an out-of-body experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Which I think was, you know, meant.
And then, boom, 20th century, back in the manse.
Yes, and poor Mrs. Graham.
She just wants to say something.
She's just wanting to tell her truth. The truth is she knows it, you know what I mean? And I thought it was such a, almost like a juxtaposition against what Claire thought might have occurred if she had tried to tell Miss Fitz that she had gone through the stones and had traveled through time. But, you know, obviously in current time you were just discredited, like, meh,
like,
you're crazy. But in the 1740s it was like, witch. You're a witch and I'm going to burn you.
So, yeah, she was talking about stories of the fairy hills and people traveling through stones. And this is the first time, except for a little bit in the Gwilyn's tale or song, that we hear a full and pretty complete coherent explanation of what happens at the stones to the best that someone knows in present day.
I almost feel like this was more description than we've ever gotten from the books.
I think so. This is the first reference. There has been talking about the time travel, obviously, mm-hmm. and Claire wonders, like, what the heck happened, but she did definitely put it together with the stones. But this is also, I think, in the series thus far, in the television series, the first great description on the road to Diana's theory of time travel.
I almost think that this was a more complete description of time travel than we even have in the books.
Yeah.
Like a description of what the stones do and kind of like a hypothesis of the whole experience. I thought it was way more described here in the series and almost more, not more eloquently, but very eloquently described.
Absolutely. Very complete.
Yes.
And very concise. And yeah. And again, it's still part of the whole thing, we know, and they mentioned it in Gwilym's song too,
yes.
that people often return.
Yes.
And Frank is ever the gentleman. He very politely says, "I simply do not share your beliefs. Forgive me." I mean, what?
Of course he doesn't.
I'm gonna have to try that line.
He's the scholar.
I know that, but my point is not that he surprised me by saying that he doesn't believe it. We know he probably doesn't believe it.
Right.
My point is the way he says it, he's not calling her a cray-cray woman, even though he probably thinks the whole pagan thing is, you know, interesting as a scholar, but totally batshiz.
Oh, for sure.
It's a folk tradition, but it's batshiz. Maybe. Maybe an educated man at that time would say that. I don't know. Maybe not use those words. But my point is, he treated her with so much respect. He's like, I'm sorry. I simply do not share your beliefs. What a great line.
He's a class act.
He's a very class act
from the beginning. Better off than his ancestor.
And then again to Wee Roger. That little face he's like he's sucking in his cheeks. I don't know what it is, but whatever he does, it's adorable. And I hope we see him again. The baby guy. Not
the baby guy?
I hope we see Wee Roger again.
I mean,
in the series.
In
this series. In this season.
I mean, it's possible. I don't know what they've got planned. Like I said, everything they do in the 40s now is totally off book.
Oh, well, that's true.
We have no idea what they're going to bring back from the 40s.
I wrote, back at the ranch, Jamie apologizes to Claire.
And by ranch, you mean meadow.
Well, 18th century meadow.
We go back to the meadow right after the almost rape of Claire. And he's apologizing to her and, you know... Oh. He feels bad about it, and she's just like,
I think I'm in shock.
I think this is me in shock. And I thought to myself, imagine what everyone would have thought had she tried to do modern remedies for shock, which is get your feet above your head. Mm-hmm. I was like, if she just, like, laid down on the ground and put her feet up on a rock, like, if people would have been like, what the hell?
Also in this scene, when Jamie is, or I should say, Dougal is speaking with Jamie about Horrocks, He's like, look, your man Horrox, I hope that he can, you know, really, I really hope that he can help you. But you have to be ready for the fact that, look, he's a deserter. These bastards were deserters. Yeah. This is what happens when you become a deserter and you turn your back on all of this stuff.
I watched this scene and I thought to myself, why didn't anyone collect the Skeendoo? It was very
probably visibly
hanging out in the dude's kidney. And I'm like, that would have been... No, but you don't leave weapons behind. So, because weapons are so hard to come by and, you know, everything. I mean, I just couldn't believe they left that hanging out of the dude's back. They showed the whole scene of everyone down in the meadow, if you will. And then Claire was up on that ridge.
Mm-hmm. That was like Wuthering Heights.
No, oh and my she gosh. Was... It made me think of like Widow's Walks.
Oh, yeah, you said that.
Uh-huh. Where, like, you know, and that's and they have these in, like, old southern houses and probably in other areas, too. But I was recognizing from, like, southern houses where they have this spot on the roof. Mm. Where basically the house has a door that leads onto a little roof where these widows, basically, and mostly in, like, southern, like, coastal towns where people died at sea. Or they were missing at sea. And it was called a widow's walk where these women would go out on the roof. And basically walk on the length of the roof and just kind of like stare out at the sea or wherever their husband died at. But they would spend time on this widow's walk is what they're called. It's like kind of like almost like a balcony on the roof. And that whole shot of her being so high above them and just pacing mm-hmm. back and forth up on that made me think of those widow's walks.
But her doing that with that one scraggly tree, that's what I saw as a picture. And so, okay, then we flash back to the 20th century, and it's not just a second. It's pretty short, though, but we see basically Frank making the decision
to leave all his shiz Claire in Scotland
behind. Yeah.
Like, all her shiz in Scotland. I was like, really? You
don't want and to by this time, I'm thinking, is he at the manse? Is he staying there?
That's
or is he
they,
still in the B&B?
No. I think the impression I was given is that he was staying with the Reverend.
But they're friends,
Once she went missing, I feel like he moved in with the Reverend and he was staying there. Because could you imagine the bill on a B&B anywhere after seven weeks?
No.
Good Lord.
Back in the 18th century, Claire is angry and she doesn't know why. Remember this. And then Jamie basically says, look, we're going to go meet Horrox. It's too dangerous, though. You stay here with Willie in this little area here.
Again, poor Willie. Like, he gets a shaft of, like, every scene in this episode.
In the book, she's left alone. But here, we end up with the same thing. He has to go off and take care of himself.
Take a dump. That's what I got from that scene. I was like, really? As I put in quotes, personal business.
This is where the line comes when she says, I think I made it clear that I can take care of myself. Yeah. And he gets testy. He's like, you don't need to prove it again.
Rightfully so. She's basically like...
stripping his manhood.
No, just like demeaning him and trying to say that you're no man. I took care of myself. I'm your wife and I'm a woman and I kept us both alive.
And he says, promise me, Claire, you'll be here when I get back. Promise me you won't leave. And after he says, you needn't prove it again, she says, you shouldn't make promises you can't keep.
No, she did. And I was like,
that was
man.
Just mean, Claire.
No, it was. Ooh. And it's like, you know, and even you know that she knows that whole thing that happened while they were doing it in the meadow was not his fault.
No, it was not his
fault.
No,
it wasn't her fault. It wasn't anyone's fault. It was just a really crappy circumstance. And to hold that against him is really ridiculous. And even she admits later in this episode, she's like, I wasn't mad at him. I was mad at myself. Even though if you went by strictly by the book,
she is mad at him. I think we may get back to that. I think she still may say it.
We may, but
she doesn't realize it yet.
I know, but she so clearly said in this episode, I wasn't mad at him. So I don't know if they're going to bring that back and flip it around, but we'll see.
So he basically says, promise me you'll stay put. Swear you'll be here when I get back. And this is important because this comes back in episode 9.
You'll see why in April.
It's, yeah, exactly.
Good Lord. April.
This is important, her promise. She's reminded of returning to her husband at this point. And that's why we find out, as you said, that's why she's angry. She realizes why she's angry.
That's what she says. That's why she says she's angry.
Whether it's whatever words you want to use, she realizes that's why she's angry. Because she says it. That's how we know she realizes it.
Oh, she's been very happily making house and home with Jamie in this episode leading up to the scene. She has not had any issue with the fact that all
we know what she realizes is what her words are.
I am saying that in every scene she's had with Jamie leading up to this scene, she's been quite happily ignoring the fact that she's married to another man in the 40s.
I wouldn't
40s.
Say ignoring, just it's not on her mind, which says a lot, right?
No, absolutely. It says not, a lot, which not means top of mind.
She and is at least somewhat content.
She's definitely enamored of Jamie, and he's definitely enough to fill that empty space left inside her.
So then again, the 20th century. Frank drives by the sign to Cranadoon, but then he backs up and he drives to the stones.
Do you know why he backs up? Because that motorcycle goes by and it's got a chick on the back of it who literally looks like Claire. Like, she literally, yeah. Like, it, the hair tie and, like, the coat. I'm like, she looks, and maybe.
I wonder if it was Katrina.
I don't think it was. But maybe that was a very, you know, normal scene from the time period. But it was like, they're like, hey, let's get a Katrina stunt double. I'll throw her on the back of a bike, ride him by Frank. And he's going to go, I'm going to go back up to Cranadoon one more time. Just because I'm on my way to town. And if I don't check, I'll always wonder.
Okay, the next, good chunk of scenes. I'm not even going to say 20th century, 18th century. It's too much. Too much back and forth.
No, but it literally was back and forth.
Back with Claire and Willie.
She clearly said, 50 yards away, and downwind, which is indicative of the fact that he's probably going to poop.
So he walks off.
And I put in quotes, personal business.
So he walks off, and then Claire walks off and sees, eventually, dun, 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 the stones. Now, okay. Big fat side note. In the books, she does walk off with a purpose, not just wandering.
Here, but she wasn't left with anybody in the books. Left by herself.
Doesn't matter.
No, it is. It does matter because in the books, she was left by herself. So her wandering off was less of a big deal because she was by herself. Her being left in a glade with another person was indicative of the fact that she was supposed to stay put because that dude was watching her. And the minute he walked out of sight line, she kind of just wandered off.
Totally, completely different. The reason. In the series, I think you just said the same thing. You think you would agree. In the series, she's with Willie. Willie goes off to do whatever he's going to do, and she wanders. You can tell she's not, or at least she doesn't tell us with her body language, with her facial.
She wasn't meaning to wander off. Not with the purpose of wandering off.
She was meaning to wander off, but not wander off to escape.
No, she was wandering off to get away from the dude pooping.
He was supposed to do that. She was just walking around to say, look, she told him to go a certain amount of pay away from her.
Well, yeah, but she didn't want to stand there and be like,
doesn't matter. Pooping. The whole point is, we agree, she's not trying to escape right now.
No.
She just wanders off, whether it's to get away from his smell.
No.
I'm talking about the series.
Okay, but in the book, she was wandering off to escape.
In the series, she is, whether it's to get away from a possible stink or just because she's like, oh, da 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 da, da. I'm going to go walk and, you know, use this time until they get back. I'm bored. I'm going to go for a little walk. Whatever it is, we agree. It's not with the intent to leave or to escape. It is just to busy herself or to get away from a smell. Who knows? But she's just trying to use the time for whatever thing. In the book, she is left alone, but I submit that she did not wander off. She left it. And she got her bearings really quickly. Something about north. I could have the direction wrong. She full on intended, when she left that glade, to have an escape attempt.
And but in the book, she didn't have anyone minding her.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. So the difference is, and so maybe we're actually agreeing, but in the series, she basically goes for a walk. And I think it's pretty cute and pretty convenient that she looks up and sees the stones. That's all I'm going to say. To me, and even if they didn't do the exact same thing as from the books, it makes sense. In the books, because she leaves with a purpose, she's just heading out. And she finds a stream, she falls into the stream, she almost drowns, and she's saved by a red coat. That's how she's found and taken to Blackjack. We know this. I just thought it was too convenient for her to see the stones without basically trying. It was too convenient that they were right there. However, I can appreciate the fact that they did that so as to be able to have the scene, the back and forth with her and Frank. I thought that was very touching.
It was, but it was also very Marco Polo for me. Like, Claire! Frank! Marco Polo! It was very Marco Polo.
And I think this is the scene I wonder if this is the scene or one of the scenes that Katrina was referring to when she said, it's hard to run up a hill in a corset.
Dude, like that looked like a struggle. It did. Literally looked like a struggle.
And here again, the music with the drum beat and the slow version of this melody is so sad. It's very hopeful, yet it's not. And Frank is crying. He yells out for Claire. Claire hears him, and I wrote, OMG, this is sad. And it's just, it's freaky and beautiful and sad. And the fact that he hears her and she hears him, it's, of course, it's bittersweet. It's definitely not in the books, but I did find it very effective. And then I love the fact that they showed her old, sodden, wrinkled up shawl still there, weathered. And I wrote, if there were commercials, there would have been one when the screen went black after she put her hands up to the stone. And I thought for a second, they better not send her back to her flashback to Frank. I would have been, oh.
What I wrote was, effing redcoats, they ruin everything.
Well, yeah, kind of.
But it makes me wonder, because she, it looked like she touched it.
That's what I'm saying.
It looked like she touched it, and then it went to black. It made me wonder if she started to go.
Oh, God!
And then the red coats pulled her, like, how close I wonder, she got to going through.
You know what? I bet that's correct. Because I bet that's correct. Okay. And two things that maybe she didn't get through. Number one, she was literally pulled away.
Right.
Number two, it wasn't one of the fire feasts, and it wasn't close. So she went back on Samhain, right?
Well, are there any fire feasts around Christmas? Because they were talking about them being back to Leoc around Yuletide.
Let's look at calendar. Well, Halloween is basically almost the same day as November 1st. If you just use November 1st. Yeah. So November has 4 weeks, right? 2 weeks into Christmas, 3 weeks into Christmas. Oh, lordy. Actually, 3 weeks into Christmas, that's 7 weeks. That is exactly December 21st, which is the solstice. Timing.
You're such an effing nerd. Like, seriously, right now I'm looking at you and I'm like, why don't you did know? You why didn't you even just have to pull up an app or something?
You don't know what the solstice is?
No. Why would I know that?
The longest night of the year, December 21st. So as the soldiers pull her away, to us it looked like our screen, right? It's on our screen. Then the camera pans left and we see, so she becomes then on the right, so we're moving to the left. Her scene's on the right. They go by a rock or a stone.
And he goes down the other side.
And he's on the left. Yeah. And I thought, oh my gracious. That was, again, very effective. And
I loved the shot of Claire in the back of that wagon. Like, seriously, she was just like
hunched over.
Like plotting, like hunched and plotting. Like,
what am I going to say? She right. knows where she's going. She knows whom she's going to see. She's like, I'll plan a little bit. Okay, so she gets to Fort William, and of course she's with Randall. And they drink. They always drink. Everybody drinks here. And he mentions, you know, you're gonna tell me your true nature, and I want to find out the secrets that you hold. And then she plays the Duke card, which she got from the Reverend.
She did. I missed the whole scene of her sitting in that room by herself. Where she goes through all of his stuff and like writes naughty words. That would have been, like,
I agree. There was so much there. Blotter. And who knows? There could have been something there that was cut. It's not as important.
It was not relevant. It was totally not. I mean, it was relevant. It was just not important to the story.
It wasn't absolutely necessary.
No, it was not absolutely necessary. So I understand why they would cut it. But it was such a fun, little detail to that scene that I was like, I'm sad to see that go. But it was fine.
So she plays the Duke card, and he spits up his wine.
He does.
Which I loved.
Oh. I thought she was a little too cocky, and that totally came back and bit her right in the ass.
She's always either too cocky or too trusting. Come on. So she says, we are both in the employ of the same great and powerful man. Even though he says, that's impossible, he would have told me just after he pauses when she says that. I think the pause is telling. I think as soon as she said that, when she mentioned the Duke, he freaked out. He was just shocked and surprised. Like, what? When she said they're both in the employ of the same great and powerful man, he pauses. I think his pause is telling. I think at that point, he's gone from shock to like, she's totally fibbing. And I'm going to try and just prove her. And from the book, we know a little bit about the Duke. He knows about it. And so even though the viewer who doesn't know the books watches this, if you go back and watch this episode later, I'm saying that could be evidence for him pausing and making that decision right then to try and prove her wrong, to be completely sure. Because he's not 100% sure. But I think when she says that, he's like, great and powerful man. Fine, I'll play your game. Let's do this.
I thought it was more the fact that he doesn't he's already been very clear about the fact that he doesn't believe a word that comes out of her mouth.
That is true. So, but he paused, which he doesn't usually do.
Well, he thought about it, which he does way more than Claire ever does, which is taking a second and thinking about it. I mean, just a beat. Not a long time, no. Claire. Just a beat to think about what you're stepping into. Because she does acknowledge the fact that she's taking a giant gamble by making that statement. And then she not only just acknowledges it, and then she just steps over that line and just everything. Takes wide, long strides into it. Like, she just fully commits to that misstep. And it was such a misstep that she should have known. She even says herself it was such a large gamble, but she had to do it. But I'm like, no, you really didn't.
She didn't have to go with a wife.
No, that's the truth. No, and like the second he mentioned the Duchess, I was like, oh, this is going to end badly.
It's going to end badly. So I loved, when she was still going for it, I loved her unwrapping and rewrapping of his cravat. I honestly thought that was actually quite sexy. I went, the look on his face. Yes.
Well,
I'm not saying she's being sexy with him.
I don't think it was sexy. I think it was.
He was.
No. I think. Yes. I think it was the fact that he was trying to clean his cravat and she came over and like started. And it was part of that character she was playing. Yes. She was playing the character of the spy, the character of the we work for the same dude and I'm a lot more powerful than you think I am. And it was all part of that character she was playing that she made that choice to do that.
Exactly. And I wonder whose choice that was, hers or the director's or
I have the feeling it was directorial. Not that I don't think Katrina has good instincts, but that felt very directed to me.
I still think it was sexy. And I loved it, but I think the thing is, because normally he's in control and him letting her do that around his neck, which is very, it's like a child.
He didn't want to. If you noticed, he tried very hard to pull away when it started.
He's got a gun somewhere. He pulled out a knife.
He's got rope in his drawers.
I know. That's what I'm trying to say. And he's a man and he's stronger than her. He could have totally stopped her. Even if he didn't like it, he at least stopped and allowed her to do it. And the look on his face was just like, almost like astounded. He didn't look shocked. He just looked like dumbfounded, like, well, she's what?
But it even started before that. It started when she said, I'm surprised you're not amusing yourselves flogging innocent people. And then he's like, we just had this conversation.
Yeah, exactly. I don't take it seriously.
I don't do it. No, not even seriously. I don't do it for amusement. And the reason he doesn't do it for amusement is because he does it because it arouses him. I mean, that's...
Yes.
It's not amusement that he seeks. It's arousal.
I wrote, what he's thinking during this whole thing with the cravat, he's thinking, what a load of patooshk.
Patooshk? Spell that.
P-A-T-O-O-S-C-H-K.
I don't think that's a real word.
It's my real word. And I swear, as soon as she finishes the cravat and she turns and walks away to the chair or wherever she goes, I swear it's a model walk.
A model walk?
A model walk.
Like from Cat the runways? Like
or something, Victoria's yeah. It was Secret. Total. I was like, oh, Katrina. And Claire then, at this point, you can hear in her voice, she starts to get a little bit worried.
She's like, oh, but you mean you work for the Duchess? And she's like, oh, she is. The Duchess. And you can see that she's like, oh, crap, what am I doing? I'm going to roll with it. And I thought and to myself, if she'd been even remotely smart, she would have known that he was effing playing her.
Exactly.
Totally exactly. Playing her. Which is what she should have expected him to do. So, I don't know. I mean, we still love you. We love you, Claire, but, I mean, this is pretty par for the course.
Yes. And then he's like, in the middle of this whole wife thing, he just like nonchalantly opens up his drawer and then doesn't do anything. And then talks, and then reaches down, and it doesn't do anything, and talks. And then finally, at the end, when he's making his point, brings out the I almost said the rubbers. brings out the ropes. And I'm like, ooh, he wants to get at least 20 shades tonight.
And I thought to myself, she has a way of making things infinitely worse than they would have been had she just shut the F up. Like, seriously, if she'd just been like, shh. I just think that she would not have dug herself into such a deep hole.
I'm wondering if it was on purpose, because if it was, I would love it. But either way, it's just nice to see. Remember, I remarked upon in the books, and I think I named one of our episodes, The Laughing Sadist with the Ribbon of Blue. Remember that?
Okay. Yeah, so we had a blue silk ribbon. Talked about it last week.
Actually, 2 weeks ago, during the Garrison Commander. Mm. I think I was wondering if we'd ever see it. Or, you know, what color was his hair ribbon? Whatever. Mm. But we still didn't see his hair ribbon, But the ribbons that he snapped, that he cut on her dress, were all blue. And they may or may not have been silk, but they were blue ribbons.
They were like teal. They were like
They were not teal. They were more blue than green.
Nah, it was like a green blue.
It was a deep blue.
On my screen, it was not blue.
But my point is, it was blue ribbon. And it was just funny that that happened to be the kind he was wearing in the book. So who knows? Maybe it wasn't a choice for that at all.
I mean, it's like he pulls that rope out of her desk and she runs for the door and there's poor Corporal Hawkins again. And I was like, poor Corporal Hawkins. And then I thought, Claire got way too cocky with Randall because he's not an idiot and she keeps assuming that he is an idiot and he's not an idiot.
Oh, that he'll believe her, yeah. He takes her, he ties her up, he, you know, kind of slaps her around and then takes
her in. This whole scene was awkward. I can't imagine trying to get away from somebody with your hands tied behind your back. Yeah. Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? You can't use your hands. You're now armless.
He rips open her bodice and then exposes her, turns her around, and, like, shoves her down the desk. Now, in the book, he was face to face with her. He was not from the back.
He did bend her down over the desk. He did push her down over the desk. Absolutely, he did.
Maybe in the
beginning. But in the book, he didn't try to cut off her nipple with a knife.
No, he didn't. But I'm saying when Jamie came to the rescue in the book, she was on her back.
Twice in one episode, people have her bent over and or, like, on the
ground. And this is at
least
the third time is attempted rape on Claire.
Absolutely.
If not, I think it's three.
Which is indicative of, like, I don't know if it's indicative, but it makes me feel like it's sad that that's what people thought of women in that time period. And that's kind of the impression you're given, that women were only used for one of two things.
And this wasn't about sex, it was about power.
No, absolutely.
And so he finds her Skiandu, he kind of... He's like, oh, well, the lady has claws or something like
no,
that.
No, and then he makes like he's going to chop her nipple off. Like
he's totally holds it up to it, and then, boom, it's Jamie in the window.
No, and can I tell you, I think that Randall had the exact same impression. Like, his expression and the words he said and the face that he made when Jamie came in the room was exactly the same one that I had, which was, good God, indeed. Like, he was, like, surprised and then excited and then happy and then, like, and ooh, what will this turn
exactly
into?
Exactly. I wrote, it was shock, wonder, happiness, and humor. Everything at one time. And just so we have it here, I know I've told Summer this before, but I don't know if we actually got it into one of our read-alongs. I don't know. And I'm not saying you didn't either, because we could have come up with it separately. But Ginger did call the exact ending.
No, this was perfect. Oh, my gosh, this was so perfect.
As soon as I finished the episode... We normally refuse to talk. We agree not to talk until we actually record. But I called Summer, and I was, like, not screaming, but I was very excited. I was like, oh, I called it! They did it! They ended it in the exact place! I mean, this is... It's not rocket science. It is just the most
perfect
way to end it.
No, it was...
Jamie in the window!
No, it was perfect, and Sam played it so perfectly.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Like, the look on his face, the way that he was, like... arched, like, crouched in that window, and between that and that look on Blackjack's face, the window, like, bursts open, and he sees Jamie there, and he's like, I'll thank you to take your hands off my wife, and he's like, oh, no way, it's you? He's like, this just got infinitely more perfect than I ever thought it would be, and I felt that that was echoed in how I felt when that window was burst open, and it was Jamie, and the expression he had on his face. It was so perfect. Like, it was so... It was just so perfect. I don't know how else to put that.
And this,
it was
again,
straight out of the
so book. Much of this, so much of this episode. Okay, the 40 stuff, of course, was added. Yeah. But so much of this episode was straight from the book. It was just like, it was just, you know, a...
Which I appreciate.
A reader's dream.
I think if you're going to keep something, there's a reason you keep it. And you keep it because it's already perfect and you just try to make it work for the screen.
Yeah.
So I think that the things they chose to keep were perfect and perfectly executed. Mm-hmm. The things they added, I thought... made sense and helped to add to the scene. The only thing that I thought was unnecessary was the mugging scene. I don't think that was necessary.
Interested to listen to
like the showing of the two fight scenes going on concurrently was way more interesting than them being separated like they were. I didn't think that scene was necessary.
Well, it didn't detract. I don't see.
It made me a little angry. Like I said, I mean, granted, he did bring a weapon with him, and he protected himself, but I thought it was kind of unnecessary to the plot.
One of the things, I think I know why, because I remember either reading or hearing Ron say this, or someone told me that Ron said this in a podcast. They wanted to show, since they're showing more of Frank, they wanted to show Frank how he was dealing with this. And not just that he was devastated, but that he also had a little Randall in him. And the only way to do that was through some kind of altercation.
I mean, so, I can see that, but I still don't think it was, like, wholly necessary.
Maybe not.
And I got angry. Like, it literally made me angry that he would... I mean, I get that he's hurt and that he's searching and he really just wants this to be the key that will lead him to his wife. But I was just like, he's not an idiot.
And that made him look like an idiot. But I think it was... If you're going to show him struggling, which they did very well, mm-hmm. and if you're going to show him, show us how the Randall in him comes out, or how the BGR, whatever, it's the same family lineage, right? Show how that blood will tell. I can see how you may want, you definitely want to show him in a more violent situation, and even an altercation in an alley is not necessarily a bad thing, but the way they got to it was from some woman coming up and saying, my name is Sally, but it's not.
Yeah.
And him being a spy, and again, not giving anything away, but throughout the series, past book one, Frank's being a spy comes back. And Frank is a brilliant scholar, historian, etc., but he's a smart man. He's a smart man. And for him, again, you're right. He was devastated in a depression and was drunk. So I guess that clouded him enough, but the way they got him there was it could have been different.
If they were trying to just show him having that edge of Randall in him, I think they could have done that with just an altercation in the bar. Like, maybe somebody...
Or the police.
Not even that. Just, like, somebody, like, accidentally nudging him or, like, getting into a slight altercation and him going way overboard. I think they could have done that without having the whole, oh, meet me in a dark alley. I thought that that made Frank look less smart than he is.
The alley thing, I think, was okay. It was just very interesting that the whole thing with Sally, my name is Sally, not Sally, coming up to in a bar. Don't look, there's too many eyes and ears around.
It's like textbook, this lady's playing you, that I'm like, I don't care how drunk you are, I thought that was really...
It was just interesting. It was an interesting choice to get him to the...
I think they could have done it in other ways. It was fine. I think they could have done it in other ways that were more true to the character, but it was fine. I just think that this way made him look a little less intelligent.
With someone else, it may have been different, but with a trained spy?
Right.
That's the only thing I have to say. That's the only thing. I think we need to wrap this one up.
Oh my God, wrap it up.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. This, as we said in our announcements, this is the last episode of the first half of the season.
Come back in April.
Come back in April. No, don't come back in April. Come back next week.
No, next week.
The show, the Stars series, continues next April. April 4th is when episode 109 airs, and we will be back strong as ever.
But we're not going anywhere.
Exactly. We're not going anywhere, so come back. In the next week or two, we will be beginning our Dragonfly and Amber read-along. And
we have some other stuff planned.
Who knows?
Get your books out. Get ready. And if you haven't read Outlander, which would indicate that you're not ready for a read-along of Dragonfly and Amber, maybe start. And you can go back through. We have a
lot of episodes.
We have a whole covering litany of episodes of the first book of Outlander. And then when you're done with that, please come back and join us for Dragonfly and Amber. You know, and that's the great thing about our podcast is that it's available pretty much 24/7. So if you haven't read Outlander yet and you start tomorrow, you could start the read-along tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And Dragonfly
and
Amber
actually
will be around when you're ready to start
and
that
one. And that's actually a great thing. Even if you don't join us for DIA read-along now and you do it in the future, if you want to start reading Outlander, that's another great thing to do during this uber long hiatus.
Oh my God. It's like 6-7 months. Crazy.
So till next week.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod, or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night.